This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
He's been in Virginia's General Assembly for almost 30 years, but that was not where he started politics. His first elected post was at the local level, a job charged with keeping track of tax dollars and government finances. Maybe that's got something to do with how he's become the go-to guy behind the scenes whenever journalists or other office holders want help understanding complicated economic issues. A fiscal conservative, he still manages to not only stay on speaking terms with those who see things differently, he often acts as a bridge between political partisans who might otherwise never talk to each other. Oh, something else you might not know about him? Basketball has long been a big part of his life. Music, too. This hour, we hope to learn even more about one of Virginia's most influential legislators, our conversation with State Senator Emmett Hanger. It's underway right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The profession of politics, the tough issues facing state government, one man's personal journey. These are all areas of focus we might be exploring this hour, and in a bit, I will be inviting you to join in, so if it's convenient for you to mark down our phone number right now, please do. It's easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Our guest has been, since 1996, representing the 24th State Senate District in Virginia's General Assembly. Now, the dimensions of that district have changed a bit over the years, although it's always included his home area of Augusta County. Today, that 24th district also encompasses Greene and Madison counties, portions of Rockingham and Culpeper counties, plus the cities of Stanton and Waynesboro. Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger. So great to see you back in the Insight studio. Thank you, sir, for making time
for us. Yeah, pleased to be
here
today. Yeah, and not on the move. Actually being here, sitting here is nice.
As opposed to talking to you on the phone while you're driving.
Right,
yeah, this is
right,
nice.
Right.
So, Emmett, I suppose that we could get into taxes, falling state revenues, ongoing battles over Medicaid or natural gas pipelines, and we may just get to all of those things. But for a start, I have to ask, how did a guy who was the first in his family to go to college, let alone end up with an MBA, the son of parents who themselves never even finished high school, how did you end up getting in to politics?
Well, it was a long story, but I think there's always been a guiding hand in my life, and I've kind of stumbled into good things. But for me, involvement, once I settled into married life and started having children, I became involved in anything that would come along, from church work, Raritan, became heavily involved in Raritan, not only in my club, but in the zone and district level of Raritan, which is a community service organization a lot of people are very familiar with here in the Valley. And, you know, as children started to school, you know, PTA, president of PTA, having a Cub Scout group, you know, working with that. So for me, it really was more or less an extension of community service and being involved in the community and that kind of expanding from work. And of course, had military, and then I remained involved in the National Guard here in the Valley.
You were a captain in the Army. You joined the Army in the early 70s.
Right. Was this
after you finished your MBA?
Actually, they were co-occurring, I guess you will. I started out at JMU. I was there playing basketball a bit, and then when I finished there, went into the military, and then actually got married in the community and finished my MBA there. After I'd come out of the military, but I was in the National Guard also at that time here in the Valley when I was completing my MBA. In fact, I commanded the Harrisonburg National Guard for about 6 years here, during that period of time in the 70s.
And you were fairly 80s. Young when you got your first elected post.
Right, yeah. We all kind of start out that way, and you know, over time we get over it. So,
but,
you know, that's been my case.
Your first job, your first election, the first office you ran for, you were elected. if I understand correctly, Commissioner of Revenue for Augusta County?
That's correct. In fact, you know, I was talking about community service in the in Raritan's at that time. Offices were very competitive within the community in Raritan, and I had friends that were involved, boards of supervisors, and involved in elected positions that were encouraged me to get involved with, at that time, the Republican Party. And this was the late 70s, and the Republican creed at that time had basically been just re-engineered and published, and I agreed with it. So I started attending Republican meetings at that time.
Tell me what you agreed with. What do you recall about how it had been changed and how it struck you?
Well, it's a general document, but it speaks to rights and responsibilities in a democracy that we all have. It did, and it still does speak to free enterprise. It speaks to the faith in God as being important to the moral fiber of the nation. It speaks to the fact that the federal government needed to maintain a strong national defense, but that it also needed to observe its limitations, or its federalism, states' rights. And those were the main parameters of the Republican creed as it was then, and as I still view it, which, you know, it obviously in modern politics, I think it's been expanded in terms of what it's supposed to mean to be a Republican or to be a conservative, which
have
is the buzzword
now. Have
you
always been a conservative?
As far as I can tell, and I think you would find that most people, Democrats included, Democrats, independent, are of a conservative bent here in the Valley.
Especially fiscal conservatism.
Fiscal conservatism, right. Fiscal conservatism.
But one of the things, Emmett Hanger, that I find fascinating about this period where you were first developing an interest in politics is if I'm recalling what I've read and what people have told me in the past, that in Virginia, in the Valley, in the 60s and even into the 70s, that Democrats were seen as generally more conservative than Republicans, and Republicans mm-hmm. were sometimes seen as liberals, or at least as moderates,
mm-hmm.
and that, I guess, began to change in the late 70s.
I think it did. In fact, while the Valley had always been conservative in many ways and having a strong faith community and still does, the Democrats were in control and had been for a long, long time. So in Augusta County, where you think, you know, you have to be a Republican to be elected to anything, there were no countywide offices at that time that had been held by a Republican since Reconstruction. And so, you know, I had the honor of being the first Republican elected to a countywide position in Augusta County. Now, that didn't mean that I believe things differently than most people, because as you're suggesting there, the Democrats were fiscally conservative, faith-oriented people that were involved in their community. And the parties, in positioning have changed somewhat over the years. And many of the people that are still around and active in politics from that era that were Democrats would now consider themselves Republicans. Now, didn't change.
For yeah. you, 1979, mm-hmm. you were elected Commissioner of Revenue for Augusta County.
Right.
And 4 years later, some people persuaded you to do something that I understand you weren't all sure was a good idea. Because
right.
that Commissioner of Revenue was a full-time job,
right.
was fairly well-paying.
Right.
You had a family.
Mm-hmm.
You were supporting, you know, eventually you had five children, but I don't know if all five of them had been born by then.
Right. Actually, when I made the decision to run for the House of Delegates, I did have five children.
Okay. So
had
so
all five children.
You have to drop this fairly nice job in order to run for a part-time job as a state legislator, which people persuade you to do mm-hmm. in 1983. What happened then?
Well, because that job, it seems like that's been my career advancement. I started relatively in a good position and went downhill. But when I ran for Commissioner of Revenue, The commissioner of revenue position is a fairly well paid position statewide now. At that time, it was not. I was doing fairly well in private business at that time, particularly in construction, and so I took a pay cut to become commissioner of revenue. Now, during my term of office, that changed, where they started benchmarking the principal office, constitutional office, at a higher level based on the population of the county. And so, I had a comfortable salary with five children to support. The House of Delegates position that I moved into paid at that time $8,000 per year. So, in Virginia, it's supposed to be a part-time job, but what I discovered, that the longer you stay involved, the more that part-time job becomes something that takes most of your time. So it's difficult sometimes, depending on your profession and how you do earn a living, to intermingle the two and to be able to run a business or certainly to work for someone and earn a living while you're doing that. So, but it all worked out. There's always been a guiding hand in my life that's allowed me to be me. And I enjoy people, and being able to make a difference initially in small ways. I think in my immediate community, and now where I've been placed with more seniority and responsibilities, being able to make a difference statewide with policies that impact people every day, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the interaction with people that allows me the opportunity to represent this part of Virginia in Richmond, and then to enact policies in Richmond that impact people's everyday lives all over the state.
Former member of the House of Delegates, but since 1996 serving in the Virginia State Senate, Republican from Mount Solon, Emmett Hanger is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. There's a lot more, Emmett, about how you got into politics and how your views have evolved that I wanted to hopefully get a chance to ask you about, but I also realize that there are probably people listening who have specific issues, mm-hmm. Since you've become such an influential member of Virginia government, that they'd like to share their opinion with you about or ask you a question about. So if you listening are such a person and you'd like to join the discussion, our phone lines are now open at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. What's the toughest issue that you see in the General Assembly or in state government right now?
Well, there are lots of tough issues, and some of them are regional in nature, but the big broad issue, of course, right now is the budget, in terms of dealing with limited resources in a political climate where it's very difficult to address funding services. We've all been conditioned now to want the best of services, and I think in Virginia the track record indicates that we've been fiscally prudent for the most part over years, and we have...
I'm not sure, Emmett, that everybody is aware that you just came out of a special session.
Right.
And that was because, in large part, state revenues have been falling.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, while the economy is improving in much of the nation, for Virginia, it's been a little bit different. And you and other legislators have to deal with the fact that you don't have as much money coming in as you thought you would.
Right, right. And we're used to outperforming the nation in terms of a robust economy. For the most part, we're not in terrible shape, but we don't like the feeling you get when you're not at least keeping track with where the rest of the country is going. And there are good reasons for that. We're looking at a federal government that's retracting now, or attempting to. People have recognized that. With sequestration and trying to recognize that you can't continue to spend money that you don't have at the federal level, that's impacting Virginia from our strong reliance on defense industry, which is important, of course, to our national security.
Let me stop you right there.
You bet.
We're going to hit a break, and we're going to continue our discussion with State Senator Emmett Hanger in just a bit more than 1 minute. He's been in elective office since 1979. His first job as a state legislator was in 1984 after being elected to the House of Delegates in 1983. But since 1996, he has been serving as a Republican member of the Virginia State Senate. Emmett Hanger is our guest. Our phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Let's go next to Penn Laird. Sandy, thanks for calling us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Senator Hanger, please.
Well, I actually have a compliment for Senator Hanger. In my eyes, he is approaching the status of statesman instead of politician. He has really very calmly and, I think, sensibly navigated some pretty tough issues on environmental items in the last couple of years, and he seems to be becoming more and more sensitive to the importance of these alternative energy issues and farm issues that regard cleaning up the bay. And I just applaud him tremendously for that and hope that he will do even more in the future. He clearly has the ability to kind of negotiate and be centrist about these issues in a very productive way. And I just can't say more than that. And again, I mean, I think he comports himself like a statesman more than a politician, and I really admire that.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for those kind words. I really take that as a high compliment, because I think in today's environment, when we are, and, you know, those of us who are engaged in policymaking, you know, do acquire the title of politician, but it does seem in today's world that that's not a very complimentary term. But I like that statesman thing. And, you know, in the environment issue that you spoke to, we have, I think, accomplished quite a bit over the last few years, and we have quite a lot more to do. Being from the Valley, I think that whether you're Republican, independent, Democrat, whatever, I think you have to recognize that we have a lot of God-given natural attributes here, resources that we need to protect, and not only for our current generations, but for future generations. So I think that spirit is alive and well in the Valley. One of the things that has led me in the area of conservation and land preservation specifically and water quality is trying to protect and advance our agriculture industry in the state, which is very important to the statewide economy.
You chair the State Senate's Agriculture
that's
and
correct.
Conservation Committee.
Right.
You also chair the statewide Chesapeake Bay Commission?
I have on a couple of occasions. We rotate that chairmanship, which is currently with a representative from Pennsylvania. But that's a
so actually it's more than statewide. It's a regional commission.
It's a regional commission.
You're still active with?
With representatives from Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia, as well as participation from the District of Columbia and other headwater states, including West Virginia, Delaware.
Well, and your activism in, as Sandy puts it, in environmental issues surprises some people, because mm-hmm. they don't always expect conservative Republicans to take a lead in that area. I don't know if that's a misconception or mm-hmm. not. But it also gets you in the middle of what's becoming a fairly hot issue in your district right now, and that's the proposed natural gas pipeline.
Mm-hmm. It does. And, of course, that's you know, when we talk about tough issues, we were talking about the budget earlier, and it's a tough issue for us. The pipeline is a significant issue because it cuts in a number of different directions. We all want good economic development. We were talking about that previously in terms of our economy. And just a footnote on that, and we may come back to that if we get additional questions, our economy actually is performing reasonably well. And more recently, we've seen that we are gradually building our economic outlook in a positive direction. So that may take care of itself, and we're going to be working on that. But the pipeline you speak of plays into a broader issue of being environmentally responsible and at the same time affording economic opportunities and wise uses of natural resources. just this past week, talking about the Chesapeake Bay Commission, I was a part of a delegation. We took 2 days last week and went into the upper reaches of Pennsylvania, where the shale gas is being extracted, the epicenter of that area, which is in the mountains west of Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And we saw the process there. We wanted to see firsthand and get educated on the extraction process and the concerns that some environmentalists have for that process, and to the extent of the reserves and what the companies were proposing. In my opinion, on the pipeline issue that you brought up, you have to respect private property rights and you have to respect the environment. Now, specifically to the pipeline trajectory that Dominion has proposed, I've talked with them, and I'm very hopeful that we can encourage them, if in fact it serves a public need to run a pipeline through Virginia, that they can push further south and get into some areas that may be more appropriate, if you will, for that larger a pipeline transmission.
Appropriate how? Less environmentally sensitive? Or?
Well, environmentally sensitive is one issue. There are ways that you can be protect the environment and still, you know, put something like that in place. I'm convinced of that if you have the right geography. But currently, in terms of specifically private property rights, the trajectory of the line is going through some fairly developed areas. Now, if you look further south, there are some routes I think that could be followed, at least for discussion purposes, that do not get into the more populous areas and are areas that are that in need, if you will, of more stimulus for economic development. In other words, right now we have the opportunity for public service companies that transmit electricity, gas, to use eminent domain in order to be able to provide their service. And I think we all understand that. We had a constitutional amendment that was approved by Virginia taxpayers just a couple of years ago that many of us had worked on and with the Farm Bureau and other property owners to make sure that eminent domain would not be used strictly for economic development, and that we passed that as a constitutional amendment. In part, we exempted public service corporations from that, but you have to look, in my opinion, at what that public service company is attempting to do.
Emmett, I need to stop you for just a moment. Mm-hmm. In the interest of people who have only recently tuned in, mm-hmm. I wanted to mention that our guest is Republican State Senator from Augusta County, longtime state legislator Emmett Hanger. Our phone number is easy to remember, is 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Sandy, I want to thank you for your call, and Senator Hanger, right while you were discussing pipeline-related issues, we got this post on our Facebook page from Susan, who asks very simply, mm-hmm. what power does Virginia government have to keep the Dominion pipeline from coming through the state? She may have a different view on this than you do, because mm-hmm. it sounds like she's completely opposed to it. Mm-hmm. But the question's a good one. Does state government have any power to prevent this pipeline from coming through, or is it pretty much a federal issue?
It is a federal issue in that a mechanism is set up, and for the most part it works appropriately, where you have the FERC, the Federal Energy Review Commission, that makes decisions impacting these public service corporations. But we also have a state corporation commission, and we have local zoning ordinances and local governments and property owners that, in my opinion, should have a say, an appropriate say. So that's where it comes down, in my opinion, to whether or not a legitimate public need is being taken care of by the installation of the pipeline.
So, Senator Hanger, are you saying that Virginia government does, in fact, have some power to prevent the pipeline from going through if you and other legislators are not satisfied with how it's being handled?
That's a part of politics. Now Dominion is a respected corporate citizen in Virginia and provides needed services, and they do a good job of that in Virginia and some of the other states that they operate in currently. But there's a political side to this as well. In being a good corporate citizen, If the legislature and local governments and the citizenry object in appropriate ways, I think it can have an impact on the decision-making process for the stockholders and those that are planning. I've already had conversations with some of the representatives from Dominion. There's more than one pipeline involved right now, and I think a broader issue for me as we look at this is it really fits into a national policy. We want to be energy independent right now, and one of the things that Dominion is proposing to do, and actually they've gotten approval for it north of here, actually in Cove Point, Maryland, on the Chesapeake Bay, is to export about 700 million cubic feet of natural gas per day, which they would liquefy at that station and ship it to Asian markets. There's where I have some concern. If in fact we are moving natural gas, which we have some fairly significant supplies and reserves that are in this Marcellus Shale, if we're moving it to foreign markets, we really, in my opinion, need to evaluate that as far as whether that is a wise policy for national security, or whether or not we would be better served in keeping those reserves here and using them strategically to offset energy concerns that we have here in this nation.
Senator Emmett Hanger, Republican from Augusta County, is our guest. Lots of other issues to get to, Senator. We'll get back to pipeline stuff if people listening decide they want to pursue that. And if you have that as an issue, you listening, that you want to talk about, we do have phone lines open at 888-967-2825. Or any other issue, you can also reach us on our Facebook page where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And a completely different issue now, Emmett, from Margaret posting on the Virginia Insight Facebook page, where she is praising your work on children's mental health services. She has two questions here. One, why do you care so much about this issue? And what do you think should happen to improve access further to mental health care for children?
Well, now, you know, I guess one of the problems we have now in the conversation we're having, we've got some questions that lead to some pretty deep subjects, which we can spend a lot of time on. Mental health is an important area. I have responsibilities in that area. In fact, the broad range of health care issues, because of my position as chairman of the Senate Finance Subcommittee on Health and Human Resources. And we're struggling right now in Virginia with our model for providing services for children and adults. As most are aware now, we've put in place a couple of new studies and commissions where we're trying to figure out how best to provide those services in cost-effective models. And in part, of course, some of our discussion came about as a result in the aftermath of the situation with Senator Deeds last year. But we're doing an extensive study of our service model, and including all the community service boards and the services that are available through them. Children's services is something, there are advocates out there that I think are making us, those of us in policy-making decisions, more aware of the problems that exist. Many adults have mental illness because they had mental illness as children, and we're finding if you deal appropriately with those issues at an earlier age with interventions, you can have better outcomes. It's just the real world we live in that we have so many issues out there in mental health that need to be addressed, and we've discovered that if you use effective models, and there are advocates out there that are helping us with the education process to know what those are, that you can put service delivery out there in pilot programs and address it in meaningful ways. So I've been encouraged over the last several years because of advocacy groups kind of encouraging us to put money particularly in children's mental health services, that we've been able to make a big difference. We've seen some significant positive outcomes. Now, obviously, there is the issue of revenue resources, and There are many things that I would like to see done now that we're simply not in the position of doing. So we're constantly working to try to find more cost-effective models. But one
of those advocacy groups that you have praised in the past and tends to get high marks from both sides of the political aisle in Virginia is called Voices for Virginia's Children.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And yeah. They became a strong advocate for expanding Medicaid under mm-hmm. the National Federal Health Care Affordable Care Act, sometimes referred to as Obamacare, that Virginia legislators, at least in their majority so far, have rejected. Voices for Virginia's Children and some other advocacy groups for improved mental health saying, if you took these additional billions of dollars in Medicaid from the federal government, you would be able to improve a number of services related to mental health, including better services for parents who have mental health problems, and their mental health problems affect children. Mm-hmm. You're nodding, Emmett, so my guess is that you have some sympathy with that argument.
No, I think it's a valid argument, and of course it feeds into the broader debate at the federal level and state level, and that it's pervasive now, and it's feeding into our elections. I don't think opposition to providing access to affordable health care should define the Republican Party right now, and that's one of my concerns as a conservative Republican. The predominant issue is, and you said Obamacare, there is so much opposition to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, as it passed. My opinion has been that while it's there, we need to make the best of it. Now, some are advocating for not trying to make it better so we can just kill it and then figure out what it is we really want to do. I could almost go there, but the problem that I see right now is it is the law, which has been supported by Supreme Court decisions, and under that law, Virginia taxpayers are already paying for services by monies that are being taken from Virginia taxpayers to Washington to fund certain services. In order to qualify for those services, we need to expand opportunities for expanding them. And so I've been an advocate for a private option plan that would allow us to receive those federal dollars back.
Which amount to about $2 billion a year.
$2 billion a year. So it's not insignificant. It has huge implications for our ability to deal with health care in the Commonwealth. The debate has become, you know, if you're a Republican, you're supposed to be opposed to that, and if you're a Democrat, maybe you're for it. Well, the truth of the matter is somewhere in between, we need to recognize that our health care mechanisms for funding, our whole system, is a great system for the most part, but it's not accessible by everyone, and it's becoming unaffordable by everyone. And so we're in a situation right now where people are frustrated because their private health care options are limited by cost constraints. At the same time, we're, theoretically the greatest nation in the world and have at our disposal the greatest healthcare system in the world, which increasingly no one or fewer people are able to afford access to.
Five-term Republican member of the Virginia State Senate from Augusta County, Emmett Hanger, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We're going to pause for a brief break, and then I believe Tony in Nelson County will be our first call when we get back. Our guest, Emmett Hanger's State Senate District, the 24th District, includes the cities of Waynesboro and Stanton, the counties of Augusta, Greene, and Madison, as well as portions of Culpeper and Rockingham counties. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Next to Nelson County, Tony, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Senator Hanger, please.
Yes, hello. It's very refreshing to hear the senator's opinions on the pipeline. I get a feeling that at least someone in the government here is sensitive to the homeowners' needs. They have planned to move the pipeline right directly through our property. We moved to Nelson County from Fairfield County in Connecticut some 14 years ago, and we're getting ready to retire, and that portion of land that they've marked for the pipeline is where we were building our retirement home. They don't seem to care about that at all. We've responded to their request to survey and come on the property several times and told them that we would not grant them access to the property, that we did not want the pipeline to come through there. And the fact is that surrounding our present home on the property and where they plan to put the pipeline is there's probably thousands of acres that are open and non-developed, and I think most of it is not owned unless by the big lumber company. I temporarily forget the name of that company, that they could go through without having to come through our private property. So what I mean, if we've answered them and we've registered letters and so forth, and we've attended town meetings and are active with the local Nelson group, but it doesn't. I just got a registered letter yesterday, where from McGuire Woods, their attorney here, who's threatening to sue us to be able to get access to our property. It makes absolutely no sense. I think they put the cart before the horse. They should have talked to the landowners first and then drew up a tentative line. Am I right?
I would tend to agree with you, and I've shared with them. I thought they did not do a good job of rolling this out. The planning process, there was the opportunity, I guess, because of the large reserves in Pennsylvania and parts of West Virginia, for a competition, if you will, to move natural gas from those sources to the coast areas and into North Carolina. So there were, they've indicated that, there were certain things they didn't feel they should share ahead of time. But I would agree with you that a corporate citizen like Dominion needs to be more sensitive to the people that it serves and the reason that it exists. I get back to the notion that if in fact they are serving a legitimate public need, then the use of eminent domain may be appropriate, but it's something that, in my opinion, we're not close to resolving that issue yet. It needs to be talked out in the venues that are available to property owners, whether that be in local government, state government, and federal government, and there's an opportunity there. I think the concern that a lot of citizens have is that because of the power of a large corporation, a stockholding entity like Dominion, that it can be a done deal in working with the feds, that it can be a done deal. So
you mean done deal in terms
done
of
deal in that, well, yeah, we're going to go through a process, but ultimately it's going to happen.
So what hope, if any, can you offer to people like Tony who are being threatened with lawsuits because they don't want Dominion to come on their property?
Well, that's a tough one to speak to, and I don't have a recommendation that I would want to air publicly at this moment, because it you're getting into some legal areas there where I think this is going to spawn some suits both directions, perhaps.
It's maybe you can familiarize ourselves with the state law, but it was my understanding, we've discussed this a little before on this program, Senator Emmett Hanger, that the law currently allows a company like Dominion to come on private property owners' land without the property owner's permission to do some portion of survey work in a situation like this. But there are other portions that Dominion might want to do, certain kinds of equipment they might want to bring on, and
right,
how extensive their work in surveying is, that they can only do with a property owner's permission. Do I basically have that correct?
That's correct, and a part of what's been in the conversation in the media is a law that was passed about 10 years ago that basically indicated for a gas transmission company, which actually Dominion really didn't have anything to do. Some have thought that perhaps Dominion was planning ahead for this down the road, but they were not involved in lobbying or asking for this legislation. And when it came through, I viewed it as something more regional in nature for end users, because we all recognize that, if you have a neighbor that might have the ability to block you getting electricity or gas onto your property, that's not a good thing. We have to yield to the the general public need and consideration for those rights or opportunities. But in this instance, I'm not so sure.
Let me see if I understand part of what I'm hearing from you, State Senator Emmett Hanger, is that for people like Tony, property owners in Nelson County, in Augusta mm-hmm. County, in Highland County, and other places where the proposed pipeline might go through, that were some significant time away from a final plan, let alone approval. But maybe the best that can be offered to those people is that it sounds like legislators behind the scenes, like yourself, are in conversation with Dominion in saying, you really need to take another look at this and consider some other options?
Well, yes, that's the short answer. I think the way you phrased it there. But in the meantime, Tony's up against a real problem there because the company is trying to pursue, you know, their current business plan, which has a certain trajectory. It needs to be sorted out. And again, particularly, and I think the will of the general public was reflected in the constitutional amendment that was proposed and adopted a couple years ago, in that we really need to restrict as much as possible the use of eminent domain and confine that to areas that are where you're very clearly meeting a public need and not for purposes of economic development. Now, so there, in my mind, that's where the issue needs to be drawn. And I think a lot of what needs to be done is being done by groups that I'm aware of in along the trajectory of the numerous proposed pipelines. And so I think people such as myself that have a working relationship in Richmond with the State Corporation Commission and can be in contact with federal legislators as well. We need to have those conversations. Local government needs to exercise its authorities as much as is practical, because that's another one of the concern points is that when you're coming through a locality that has in place a master planning for how they want the county to be developed, and if you have other options to meet the public need, if there is a legitimate public need, those should be exercised rather than even consider the use of eminent domain.
Tony, thank you so very much for your call. Please do keep in touch and let us know how things work out there in Nelson County. State Senator Emmett Hanger, longtime representative from Augusta County, is our guest. We've got a few more minutes to take calls, so just in case you've just joined us, I'll repeat once again that our phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. We're going next to Afton. Dwight, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Senator Hanger, please.
Thank you. I'm from Nelson County, obviously, and I'd like to compliment Mr. Hanger on his understanding of the process here. So I think it was very articulate and very thoughtful. Thank you for that, sir. I would go back to the previous point, though, which we're talking about health care, though, and wonder if you might be aware of a study done by the Commonwealth Fund recently of 11 industrialized nations looking at about 12 different measures of health care quality, including cost. And of those 11 nations, the United States came in number 11. All 10 above us are single-payer systems. So I'm very concerned when I hear folks saying, oh, let's modify a private insurance-based health care system. So what mm-hmm. do you think, sir?
Okay, well, actually that, you know, the observation that you're making there and the point you're making is a part of the bigger debate. And in fact, some who do not like the Affordable Care Act right now are convinced that that's the direction we need to go in the United States. And some, if you listen to the talk shows, are convinced that the administration is just kind of setting us up, you know, for that by putting in place a system that is destined to fail. I don't quite agree with that. I like the private options that we have available to us, but you are very correct in that we sometimes make incorrect assumptions about our healthcare system. We have lots of great things going on in our healthcare system, which we're leaders in the world in many respects. But in terms of the amount of money that we spend supporting our healthcare system, we're way, way down the list, or I guess I should say we spend multiple amounts more than most of the nations that have good health care systems. We per capita, we spend extreme amounts of money for what some would argue is comparable or even better incomes than some of the other advanced nations in the world. So your point there is valid. As far as the single-payer system, that's a valid argument to make, and some would suggest, particularly with the findings that you suggested there from the group and their study, that many industrialized nations in the world are able to at least control costs by a single-payer system. But I'm still of the opinion that we need to work within the system that we have and improve it and work for efficiencies. And some of that is being done currently through managed care, and we're working on that. I've had the task of working with the Medicaid Innovation Reform Commission, where we've been looking at expanding our managed care options for the high-cost populations, that being long-term care for the elderly and those with disabilities, intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we have the opportunity to save a significant amount of money by more appropriately managing that care, which can force some of the costs down. But no, your point is well taken in terms of those who would make the argument that there are too many people with their hand in the till along the way for us to have reasonable costs in our healthcare system.
Dwight, thank you so very much for your call. Sandra Hanger, we're going to run out of time before we do. In the 35-year period that you've been in politics, any number of people have talked about how things have changed remarkably over those 3.5 decades. The politics becoming much more partisan, many more roadblocks, much more difficulty reaching consensus, let alone compromise. I wonder if you have a sense, with all that experience, of whether there are things that could be done to improve the situation we find ourselves in today. Is something that you've supported in the past, nonpartisan redistricting, something that you think would make a big difference, or is there something else that would give us hope?
Well, in short, you can't take the politics totally out of politics, and there are or should be better ways of redistricting, and I would agree that the current system, the partisan politics has allowed a larger hand rather than community of interest. So we need to work on that, whether it be a redistricting commission has been suggested on occasion in the past. I think that could work.
Is part of the problem, Emmett, that when legislators, whether congressmen or state senators or members of the House of Delegates, end up having safe seats, that their districts are gerrymandered in such a way the general election they know that their party is going to win, then what you're facing is worry about primaries from, in the Democratic Party, the extreme left, and in the Republican Party from the extreme right. So you have elected legislators going to the extremes to protect themselves from primaries? Is that the theory of why redistricting to a more balanced situation would be better?
Well, I think that would help. The politics kind of goes from one side. I've been in the Senate now, and I was out for a brief period, but in the Senate now for 19 years. I'm in my 19th year now in my fifth term. And what I've seen is more of the moneyed interest. And as you saw this beginning in Washington at the federal level, where if you spend enough money, you can convince people to vote for positions that are not in their best interest. That seems like that would be odd, but that happens. And what we're finding is that
when you say convince people to vote for things that are not in the best interest, you're not talking necessarily about legislators. You're talking about
the general public.
The general public when they go to the polls.
The general public, and you can convince them, that policies that are not in their best interest are things that they should support. And it happens. And it's a part of the disinformation, if you will, I guess, that's being put there. We're all, I think if we go back to the founding fathers, for the democracy to work well, we need to be informed voters. Well, we're getting a lot of information nowadays, but there are people who have learned that if you misinform people, then you can get the outcomes that you desire. That's a big part of it. It plays into the polarization in the political arena that we see today.
I'm so sorry that we're out of time, because it sounds like we could have at least another hour talking about how voters can become more discerning.
Right. But let me just, if you got just a second, a very positive note. Virginia is poised, I think, for growth, and I'm going to be working over the next couple of months on a number of initiatives that will help rural areas respond in some creative ways, I think, to more vocational training and things that people need in their everyday lives. And here in the Valley, you know, things historically have been good. We've been leaders with common sense, and I'm hoping we can take a leadership role again in making sure Virginia is governed with common sense.
Well, I hope we can have you back soon to talk more about that. Our guest has been Republican State Senator from Augusta County, Emmett Hanger. Senator, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.